So hello.
Oh, I'm going to move here so that into the gallery. Great. Very pleased to be invited by Mike and you, Elizabeth, to be part of this particular gathering. I appreciate it very much.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you so much for being willing to be part of this. And we try to do our work in the spirit of dialogue, in the spirit of a you could say a collective presence, our shared presence. And so I think it's very much very congruent with your work. And social presencing theater, I think most of the people who are here know, has been created as part of the Presencing Institute, which and it's an art form, a communication form, a systems change form, which is I think that was hit on by different people who spoke those different aspects, that and brings that all together through our embodiment, which is quite extraordinary. I'm wondering if you could speak to what is a true move?
So sometimes we say that a true move is a maybe description of something that comes out of open space, openness. I'm trying to recall this quote of Suzuki Roshi, which is if it comes something like if it comes out of nothingness, that is natural and that is true activity. Something like that. And by nothingness, I don't mean some kind of blankness particularly, but just the open space of mind and out of direct perception or experience, rather than being shrouded by or limited by or cataloged by, past knowing. So past knowing means stories, memories, opinions, assumptions, belief systems, everything that kind of makes up what we think of as me. If we could suspend a little from that and speak from this moment, a fresh moment, speak from that or gesture from that. I think there's something that we're trying to get at that would be the true move. And I was interested in what someone said earlier about discipline. But I've had the incredible, auspicious coincidence and blessing and privilege in life to have great teachers. There was some mention of Trungpa Rinpoche, who's a Tibetan meditation teacher and social visionary. My own teacher in Japanese court dance, we were talking about this before we opened our session today, the sort of ancientness of this art form, which was about bringing some kind of positive, peaceful energy to the world, particularly within the imperial court at the time, which was the leadership principle, the connection of the leader to vision and groundedness and heartfeltness, the feeling quality. And also incredibly grateful to Otto Scharmer, Peter Senge, some of those who I met, not knowing anything about systems. I mean, it was called interdependency, as I remember at one time. And their recognition that this kind of work, in terms of a kind of contemplative movement practice or art practice, could bring benefit to their work in terms of systems change. And that community within the Presencing Institute that holds and really co-created this work, I'm just incredibly grateful for that. So I think landing here, I feel enormous gratefulness that all of us have our own lineages of teachers and mentors and all of those that back us up in terms of cheering us on in a world which is incredibly challenging and uncertain and disruptive. So.
Yeah, it's also beautiful how, and I think you're such an example of this, how your different lineages have come together in you to create this form of social presencing that you've brought together the lineages that have the teachings from different threads into something of its own, but that is also deeply related to what you've been taught.
I think that's probably what all of us do to some extent. We've been educated in a way. We've had our life experience, and then how do you kind of be the most helpful you can in the world? Whether it's like what Britta is saying within the context of that she's in, or in education, as the wonderful work that Maria and Mike do. This. You know, we're, I think all of us, the challenge is that we know things, right? And then we're in a context in which not knowing is the canvas that we're working on. Part of my work also is in improvisation, which is making things up with other people. And, it requires a real appetite for not knowing. The work of Presencing Institute is the sense of, you know, an emerging future. Presencing means that we can be present enough that we can sense this future, which hasn't happened yet. And it is based upon a premise, which may or may not be true, but certainly my work is based on a premise that this body-mind system, the individual, each of our body-mind systems, our family systems, our teams, our organizations, they don't long to be pathological. They don't long to be dysfunctional. But that there's some innate wisdom and goodness and care in every system, the visible part of it, the body, many bodies, all of our bodies that are visible, and the invisible part of it, the quality or the field part, the social field part, the mind-heart part, that it longs for healthiness.
And wholeness.
Yeah, and yes, wholeness. Or sanity, or passion, or whatever we want to call this care we fundamentally have for this world, the well-being of this others in the world. And so I know we hear people say, "Oh, you know, the main thing is to take care of yourself. You know, take care of your family and yourself. Forget about the rest." And I do know people say that and feel that way, and yet. Underneath, I think our work is anyways based upon people's genuine interest and care that they do not want to destroy this planet or each other.
Yeah. And there's a the part of your work is to enable people to get in touch with that care, and also to be able to see and see through, I guess is the maybe the right word, to see through or move beyond the stuck places.
That's right. Or deepen into the respect for the stuck places. All of us,
Have stuck places.
yes, individually, and then, we manage to make messes everywhere, all of us, create misunderstandings and bad feeling and fearfulness and whatever. But just to say, maybe if we just stayed with that, stayed with the discomfort of that. Stayed with it. Then what is the true move that comes out of that? What is the gesture? It's really going to be blame and othering and ignorance. Is it really going to be that? Or if we stayed with the discomfort of it, right? The felt knowing in the body, is it possible that this true move, which is this gesture we're calling of maybe just simplicity, a gesture of genuineness, will come forth naturally. So the interesting thing about this comment about the discipline is that it's both discipline, which I really appreciate, it's practice, and it's natural, both at the same time.
Natural meaning spontaneous or not premeditated.
Again, if I quote Suzuki Roshi again, do you know Shunryu Suzuki? If you've never read Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, if you have any interest in how your mind works, and a wonderful person who taught on the planet at one time, it's a tiny book, and one of the things he also says there, and he's kind of known for this statement with his students, he says, "You are all perfect, and you could use a little improvement." So it's that we are all by nature, in the view, I'm not saying that this is truth particularly, I'm just saying that it's the view of our work, that by natural, I mean that we naturally, as a human being, that's a good thing to be a human, and that there is basic goodness to every human being. And we could all have some discipline in terms of training and practicing and listening and all of the methods we have out there these days, both in the kind of mindfulness awareness work as well as in the art work and the systems change work. There's many opportunities now to find a little path for supporting us.
So part of what I hear you speaking to is that there's a wisdom that and I would call it wisdom that is in our embodiment that is different from the kind of categorical mind and the what it has access to.
Not sure it's different. Let's just say, I often say that our work is a little restorative justice project. Generally, the thinking mind that can analyze and remember and categorize and judge and whatever is stronger, that says this is what we should do here. And then there's the body voice, which is not as loud for most of us, just because of the way we were educated, the culture we live in. It's more like this, right? We hear it when it's sick, and we notice it when it is not working particularly, but or we notice it within we do yoga or we do running or something, But it's not, it's voice as a moment to moment kind of informant on what we're doing in terms of some kind of introspection or, you know, interoception or just sensing is not as strong for most of us. So a lot of our work is just asking the stronger, more powerful voice, the one that's louder, to step back a little so that the one, so that the voice of the embodied knowing comes forward. So this shoulder knows something, these hands know something, this back knows something, that, and we're just trying to get it in the conversation. So that's the, it's not so much that we disrespect the thinking mind, but we also are inviting this embodied voice as well. And both of these voices take place in awareness or the sense of spacious mind, right? So the in the end, we're always pointing back to the mind that knows. It knows. And we can trust our sense knowing. It doesn't have to mean something. Yesterday, I had this opportunity to be on a podcast with a man whose name is Tim Logan. I don't know who this is, but he invited me, and there were two other women who both do embodiment in schools. So it was about education, embodiment in schools. And they do, one does more movement things, and the other some embodiment practices somehow in education. And he, and the man quoted somebody who he had had on this podcast before, who said, the quality of the sense making is completely dependent on the quality of sensing.
Mm-hmm.
Like your sense perception knowing has to be, you know, precise and present in order to make sense of your experience. So it again encourages this kind of sense knowing. We see what we hear, what we feel. But this is a kind of, yeah, I don't know if I'd go so far as to say wisdom, but it's certainly a kind of intelligence that's needed in the conversation that we're having now on the planet, which we're
losing. Can you say more about that? Can you say more about how this work responds to what is happening?
You know, I live in the U.S. It's like,
yes,
in which the leadership says things, to quote loosely, empathy is the real problem. That's where there's weakness. Somebody, this is what he said for heaven's sakes.
Yeah.
So I'm living in a country where that's the leadership, right? And everything else that we read in the paper that all you know, right? For one thing. But just the fact of, you know, how we relate to AI, how we relate to, you know, polarization, not only political, how we relate to this warfare that's going on all over the planet. We need to build a capacity, which I'm again saying is within the body and groundedness of body, to just be with what's happening for one thing. And then to let that, we taught this morning a Dharma art course where Trungpa Rinpoche calls us things as they are. We leave it alone and we just feel it and experience it first. And then this kind of invitation for wisdom or for connection or for creativity can come out, but not from a place of forcing something or a place that I have a solution or I know what to do or of, you know, that kind of thing, that this gap between, or this polarization now or polarity between, like, I'm paralyzed because issues are so big, what Otto calls, you know, the illusion of insignificance, that we can't actually engage because the problems are too complex and too large, to like jumping out, even though we don't really understand the full picture, and engaging from a very limited and like out of date view. So the true move is trying to sense into our situations, whatever they are, in whatever our context, And maybe to go back to what you said earlier about stillness or silence, let's say the stillness, the non-doing, non-knowing. Then what is the gesture? What is the gesture? What are the words that come out of this ability to be with not knowing, not doing, which can be quite uncomfortable, but having some kind of faith or trust that we can connect out of that place and that that is genuine, it's true. But that's the practice that we're investigating with our what we're doing in the social arts and what many of you are doing with mindfulness and other supports for that.
Great. It's powerful to me to hear you speak of this is very empowering what you're saying. It's very much this opening to not knowing to and allowing something. We often work in dialogue, in language, with what comes through. And so a kind of a true gesture of speech, a true which is, I think, very related to what you're speaking of. And it's informed by, I mean, that field, that openness that you mentioned, it's informed by that openness, which is actually, we can't grasp it. It's ungraspable, but I would call it, it's related to the wholeness, that our openness brings us in touch with something that we can only glimpse, but is a truth of wholeness that allows us that comes through in a way that is often quite unexpected. And it's interesting, the cognitive scientist John Vervaeke, I don't know if you know his work, but he speaks about participatory knowledge. That there is and that being a knowledge that we have a real deficit in Western culture, that our capacity to co-participate in the creation of meaning and realness is very is really ignored by and large in our culture. And that participation through that openness, one is participating in the emergence of something that is not simply what we already know. Let's just even leave it like that. I'm fascinated by how you bring this work with the True Move into an understanding of how to work with systems. How do you get from one to the other?
So it's I think the first thing oftentimes is that how easy it is to forget that to forget basic interdependency, that there isn't any individual, as it were, that we're always within We're always co-creating social systems. There's no observer or somebody out there creating social systems. There's, of course, power difference in terms of influence. But all of us contribute to whatever is happening. We all somehow contribute either by offering attention or action or by ignoring and closing down. So, in terms of systems thinking, or what we often say in presencing is system sensing, the reason we use the body or the social presencing theater is around this word theater, that the root of the word theater is a place where something is seen. And systems thinking and sensing is an invitation for the system to see itself and to sense itself. So, a part of our work is making visible, because the body is very visible, right? We see each other, it's visible. Making visible the relationships within systems, and that the quality of that relationship is what we're calling the social field. So if we pick up again on this presencing language, which is so familiar for some of us and not so familiar for others, but the emphasis recently in Otto's work, he and Katrin Käufer have a new book called Presencing. There's a lot of emphasis on this cultivating social soil, which is probably what all of us are doing within our context. The quality of relationships, the quality of relationships needs to be cultivated. It needs sunshine and warmth and light and nutrients. And because the quality of the soil is completely, the plant is dependent on the quality of the soil, whether seeds are going to take hold or not, and whether the plant is going to be healthy or not, it depends on the quality of the soil. So the in our kind of work, systems is the soil cultivation. Again, whether it's a family system or your team at work or your population that you work with, classrooms, teachers, school administrators, healthcare. I just work with doctors, healthcare. Like, what is it that is their kind of soil? How do we make it visible that they are a system and that everyone has the agency to create, to contribute to creating this good soil? So this requires like both our making, that means we're engaged in something, conversations or making schedules or agendas or strategies or whatever we make, but it also is that we are the beholder of something. So the theater, like if you look at the theater in general, there's some people doing something on a stage. They're acting, they're dancing, they're singing, whatever. And then there's some people who are holding the space for this. So they're contributing their attention, and so together they co-create some kind of social reality, which can be transformational. It can be. So the sense that all of us are actors in life and all of us are beholders, all of us are speakers sometimes and listeners at other times, this sense of the how we hold the space for one another, how we create these containers where the true move, the true gesture, the true word is invited. And that's, I think, most of our work, that to see that this is, that whatever it is, it's a little system, a little body-mind system, a social body with a social mind, which is what we're calling the social field, that sits, as Mike pointed out earlier, it sits on the Earth's body. It's grounded. It has a belly. It has a low body. It's not just a head and eyes and a mouth. And it, but it sits on the Earth. On wherever you are now, you've got a place on the planet right now. We're not on the same spot on the planet. We have different spots on the planet. But we hold our kind of connection to the good Mother Earth. We hold that. And we remember that she's holding us, right? She's supporting us completely. We, you know, we can rest there. And then we can open out from there in terms of our awareness. And out of the awareness is where our feeling of connection, our like conversations that have real meaning and real depth can arise. Like that. So in terms of systems, it's, you know, we're always in a system.
Yeah.
They're always changing. So that we can rely on, right?
Yeah, no, I'm actually really touched by the recognition in what you're saying, that we each are a system, and we're part of the system that often we're trying to change, right? I mean, we're raised and educated in thinking and being in certain ways. And so this true move kind of makes cracks in that. It cracks it. It opens, it brings in a different quality of air.
That's right.
It actually is something that breaks the system.
Yeah, it interrupts.
It interrupts. Yeah, that's better.
It interrupts sort of habitual conventional flow.
Yeah. Yeah, and opens to a different flow that is coming from a different source.
Could be, but
could
first
be.
It just opens to not knowing what's happening. That's the part that I'm interested in, rather than what would be the goal. I'm interested in the fact that, now what?
Yeah.
I'm interested in awkwardness. I'm interested in, just losing one's frame of reference for a moment. It's basically, I'm interested in fear, right?
Well, actually, isn't sacredness, part of it is horror?
I
Or
don't know.
Awe, I mean, one of the classic philosophical treatises on the sacred says that there are two dimensions of the sacred. One is awe and like kind of surrender awe, and the other is almost akin to horror, like, oh no.
But
because it's taking you out of
what you know,
out of your frame. Yeah.
Sometimes that's called egolessness, right? It's like a gap in the blah di da di da di da da.
The Matrix.
I never saw the. I mean, or don't. I have terrible memory for movies, but I think that's it. Yes.
Yeah.
Just takes us out of the conventional thing that keeps saying it's me, it's me, it's me, and that's them, and it's me, and that's them, and we have to make a relationship, and the whole thing just goes away. Because there's a gap in that. And it's why we use this. I don't have. Oh, yeah, I do. It's why we use this symbol, because it's so helpful for our work, right? So this is a Japanese. Many of you know this already, but if you don't know, this is a Japanese word for it's called ma. And it's a torii gate, right? That's a picture. It's a gate with the sun coming through. So it's an important kind of image in our work, because it translates. It's one of the basic aesthetic principles in Japanese work, in Japanese culture. It translates as a gap or an interval in time and in space. It's just a gap, right? So it brings this moment of stillness or sort of nothing happening. It interrupts a conventional kind of flow like that. So I don't know how it exactly ties with either awe or horror, but it does. It does leave room for something else to emerge that may not have been expected. And it also does, I think, connect, as you've pointed out, Elizabeth, with something about sacredness. It's something about recognizing the sacredness of the ordinary. That ordinary moment to moment unfolding of life is innately sacred, for people that use that kind of language, that word. I think there is a connection. I mean, not everybody would be resonant with that particular word, but for those of us that are, there is something about that brings us to the fact that ordinary life, ordinary conversations, there's some quality of that sacredness or vastness or goodness that we could just contact.
Or beauty.
Yeah, beauty, exactly. Aesthetic. I mean, it's an aesthetic principle, the feeling, knowing quality.